Kunjabi Hari. Kopi dan balaba, Grivaradari, Jaya Grivaradari. Pidana Balaba Grivadari Chaya Grivadari. Kopi dan balaba, Grivadari, Jaya Grivadari. Sodanandana Raja Dhanaranjana Jaya Raja Dhanaranjana. Sodanandana Raja Dhanaranjana Jaya Raja Dhanaranjana. Sodanandana Raja Dhanaranjana Jaya Raja Dhanaranjana. Yamunatiravarachari Jaya Kunjabihari. Yamunatiravarachari Jaya Kunjabihari. Radha Madhava Jaya Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunjabihari. kopi dana balaba griva dari shaya griva dari. Balaba Grivardari Chaya Grivardari. So da na na na, Radha dana ranjana, Jaya Radha dana ranjana. So da na na na, Radha dana ranjana, Jaya Radha dana ranjana. Amunatira Varachari Jaya Kunja Vihari. Yamunatira Varachari Jaya Kunja Vihari. Yamunatira Varachari Jaya Kunja Vihari. Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari. Vishnupad, Paramahansa, Prabhudakacharya, Asadhara, Sadushi, Shriman, His Divine Grace, Lacey, Bhaktivedanta, Swamiraj, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai, Gaur, Premanande, all glories to the sound devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristai Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutum Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya De Satarane. Om Agnate Varandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shigaro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigaram Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Sabadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakans Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Vrishuvanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sinuvyevacha Patidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Thank you all for coming. My name is Prahladananda Swami, and we're going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Is anyone here for the first time? You've heard of the Bhagavad Gita before? A little bit. So this Bhagavad Gita was spoken 5,000 years ago by Lord Krishna. Krishna is the name for God in Sanskrit. There are many names for God, just as Jehovah, Yahweh, Adonai. So Krishna means God, but it means God because he's all attractive. That someone is attractive because they have certain opulences. For instance, if someone has some beauty, they become attractive. If someone has some wealth, they become attractive. If someone has some strength, they become attractive. If someone has some knowledge, they become attractive. If someone has some renunciation, they become attractive. For instance, Hercules or Atlas is attractive because they were supposed to have strength. Howard Hughes or Bill Gates is attractive because they have money. Krishna is all attractive because he has all these opulences, namely strength and beauty and knowledge and fame and wealth and strength to an unlimited degree. Now, of course, since we can't at this present time personally perceive Krishna, how can we tell that Krishna has all these opulences? Are we just fanatical followers of a Hindu god called Krishna, and we're ascribing to him attributes of great opulence? Not exactly, because we have one of Krishna's opulences before us. That opulence is called the Bhagavad Gita, which we'll read from. That is, if God or Krishna has unlimited knowledge, then we should be able to perceive that knowledge if we hear him speak. If someone has unlimited knowledge, then whatever they speak must be unlimitedly intelligent. So here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has given instructions to his friend and disciple Arjuna concerning the nature of reality. And this Bhagavad Gita is open for everyone to listen to it and see whether or not it makes any sense. Not only any sense, but whether it makes absolute sense. Absolute sense means that whether we speak the Bhagavad Gita today or 5 million years from now, or if it was spoken 5 billion years before, it still should be perfectly correct. The third chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called Karma Yoga. Karma means everyone is engaged in some kind of activity. We cannot stop from doing things. Basically speaking, everyone is doing something to become happy. No one is working to become miserable. You don't have to do very much to become miserable. But to become happy, that requires knowledge. So everyone wants knowledge of how to work in such a way as to get happiness. Now Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita tells us of different kinds of happiness. And he'll tell us that because we don't perceive things correctly, therefore we don't know how to actually become happy. In modern society, people are very much convinced that they know many, many things by their scientific attempts at empirical investigation. They think they know what the little things look like through a microscope, what the big things look like through the telescope. They've psychoanalyzed people's minds. They've made so many formulas, and therefore they think they know many things. But Bhagavad Gita declares that unless one knows who one actually is, one's knowledge is lacking. And at the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has made a very simple statement. He says, Dainosmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dahantara praptir diryas tatra namuyati, that as the embodied soul continually passes in a body that's going from boyhood to youth to old age, so similarly the soul will pass to another body at the time of death. A self-realized soul is not bewildered by all these changes. In other words, we all have direct perception of the fact that we have a body, material body, which is constantly changing. We can remember being a little baby, boy or girl, or a 15-year-old baby, boy or girl, and presently we have this body. But in spite of all the different changes of the body, we ourselves, within the body, we're always the same. Therefore, we're different from the body. Of course, this should immediately make one, Brahma Buddha Prasanatma, completely joyful, because our main anxiety is that the body is going to die. And if we find out that we're not going to die, we should become joyful. But we don't necessarily become joyful. At least I can't see anyone's hair standing on end right now after hearing this message. Well, why don't we become joyful if we're actually eternal? If it's so simple to understand that we're different from the body, why don't we suddenly become ecstatic and think, I have nothing to worry about? No, because even if we have the intelligence to understand that we're not the body, we don't have the realization to actually experience directly that we're not the body. We have some intellectual insight, perhaps, but not very much experience. Therefore, due to illusion, in spite of the fact that we know that we're not the body, still we identify with the body. And here Krishna, in this particular verse that I'm going to read, explains why we identify with the body and what we can do to get out of that problem, because that's our only problem. Our only problem is that we don't know who we are and we're thinking we're something that we're not. Or maybe in the other order, we think we're something that we're not and we don't know who we really are. Here Krishna says, Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishtanam uchate etaravimotyatyesha gyanam avritya dehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. In other words, here Krishna is explaining that there's an energy, not only the gross energy that we see in terms of a material body, but a subtle energy called lust. And lust has two aspects. One is it covers our real consciousness, so we don't perceive directly who we are. And the other, it bewilders us into thinking that ourselves to be someone that we're not, namely this body. And here, Lord Krishna says, the enemy, in the previous verse, Krishna said that lust is our enemy. Nowadays, we have many enemies. We hear about so many terrorists trying to bewilder us, destroy us, etc. But here it says that our actual enemy, fundamental enemy, is called kam or lust. Has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul. In other words, our worst enemy, there may be other enemies, but our worst enemy, namely illusion, has conquered or captured different parts of our consciousness and body. And as a great general, Krishna will tell us what these parts are so we can become aware of what our real fight is. Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And as a result, the mind and the senses become repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13. Yas yatma buddhi kunupe trita duke swadhi kalatradi shubhama idriji yatirta buddhe salile nakarahichish ganesh pavageshu sa eva gokara. A human being who identifies his body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. So I'll read the verse again. Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishtanam uchate eteravimohatyatesha gyanamavrityate hinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Here it mentions that we have senses. Senses we can all perceive. Our sense of sight, our sense of hearing, our sense of touch, our sense of smell. And we also have a mind. Mind is that subtle element which has feeling. Thinking, feeling, willing are within the realm of the mind. Generally, the mind has two different activities. One is hankering for what we don't have and lamenting over what we lost. And above the mind is the intelligence, that subtle element which puts things into perspective. By intelligence, we perceive the difference between what's called man and woman. What is the difference between different colors? What is the difference between good and bad? On the basis of that intelligence, we make decisions on what's desirable and what's not desirable. But above the intelligence is the soul. That is the person within the body who's accepting and rejecting different types of conceptions of life. In modern society, generally the conceptions of life are rather limited. choice is whether to accept brand A cigarette or brand B cigarette or brand C cigarette. So this is considered to be choice, discrimination. One is cool, one is cooler than the other, etc. But there's a whole different realm of choice of conception of life. For instance, when we hear that we're not the body, that we're a spiritual being, and that there's a supreme spiritual being, and that we can utilize our present energies to serve that supreme spiritual being, and that supreme spiritual being is not only in the spiritual world, but presently he's within our heart. He's that person who's giving us the intelligence by which we can discriminate, especially between matter and spirit. When we hear that the body is changing, but the soul within the body is the same, we ourselves are the soul, then that intelligence, that perception, that conception of life is coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's another energy which is also connected with the Supreme Lord, but it's his illusory energy, which we hear that if we gratify the sense, we are the body, we are the mind, we are our conception of life, and if we serve the dictations, the pushings of the senses and the mind, then we'll become happy. Just like I use the example many times. Well, here it mentions that in modern society, generally the conception of life is make money. Because that's the key to happiness. Because if you make money, then you get the ability to buy whatever you want or whatever the television tells you to buy. And if the television doesn't tell you, your parents will tell you, or a magazine will tell you, or someone will come along with a leaflet to tell you. But everyone's very interested that we all make money. And even if you don't have money, at least get a credit card. Somehow or another, get money and spend it. And spend it for different things that will generally gratify the senses. Something to eat, a nice place to sleep, something for mating or relationships with others, some protection for all the things you accumulated, insurance and barbed wire and bell and alarm systems, money in the bank, etc. Something to protect all the things that we have accumulated in order to make the senses feel satisfied. And it's advertised, this will make you secure, this will make you happy, this will make you successful. People will appreciate you, they'll envy you, they'll want to be you, because you're God. You're the Supreme. You're the best thing that ever happened, that ever will happen. And all you do is have to brush your teeth with the right toothpaste, put the right underarm deodorant on, and everyone will fall in love with you and worship you. Or at least your material body, who you think is you. So that's also a conception of life, and it is a very common conception of life. Make money, enjoy the senses. But here, it mentions a different conception of life. Is yes, we have to eat. It is not that we should stop eating. We may not be our car, but that does not mean that we're going to stop putting fuel in the car, thinking that I'm not the car. Why should I supply any food or any gas or oil to the car or clean it or maintain it? No, because the car has a purpose. Obviously, if I want to utilize the car, I have to utilize it in such a way is that I also maintain it. Krishna consciousness does not say that we should not maintain our body, but life is not meant simply to maintain the body, simply to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Life is meant to understand how to eat, how to sleep, how to mate and defend in such a way as we become free from this bodily concept of life. We can realize our eternal nature, which is free from all anxiety over a temporary body and a positive, blissful existence in relation with the Supreme, loving, all opulent, all intelligent Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, when we hear about the glories of sense gratification, which are all pervading in modern society, then one has to understand that as soon as we accept the idea by hearing the glories of, for instance, in every magazine I've seen, you open it up, there's a car there. So they're very anxious that we buy cars. I guess that's a very basic principle of modern society, is that you need a car to go anywhere. Actually, they need you to buy a car so they can somehow or another keep the gross national product increasing. Of course, if you buy a car, then you have to buy the oil and the insurance, you have to have the garage, you have to buy so many different things. Comes along with the car. If we accept this idea, I need a car, need a car. If that mantra is there within our mind, then we become very anxious. How to get a car? How to get a car? Don't worry. We have the perfect credit plan for you. You don't have to work. You don't have to pay it immediately. You can just pay it in the next three lifetimes. You just sign here and it'll all be taken care of. Therefore, people buy a car, or nowadays, of course, there's a house. You get a little shack, it costs you $500,000 in some parts. So although you're making $5 an hour, they give you the perfect house for $500,000. And you just have to pay it off on time, a lot of time. Previously, they had to shackle people with chains and get them to act as slaves for the cruel master. Now they don't have to do that. Now people, they sign their shackles on. And they're anxious to do it. They feel insulted if you don't enslave them. And then one is hankering, now I got it. And it wasn't the house I wanted, but I got it anyhow. That maybe take a few weeks to figure it out. Now I need another house, but I got to sell this one. But no one wants it for $500,000. So then I'm lamenting, oh, I made a mistake, I bought the wrong house. Matter of fact, I got the wrong wife. And these kids, I don't like them either, but what to do? So then one is constantly lamenting, and thinking, if only I had this other house, and this other wife, and this other car. And they're saying, well, why don't you get two cars? Why lament? And you can get a girlfriend and a wife. That's legal. And have a few extra kids, etc. And just pay for them with your credit card. And if that one doesn't work, get another one. Get another credit card. You got a lot of lifetimes to pay it off. In other words, this is all a bewilderment, an entanglement. But while we're struggling in the material world under the illusion that we're going to become happy by accumulating more and more material things, and that somehow or another life is meant to lament all the time, the fact that we can't enjoy as much as we want, therefore we should lament. It's an honest emotion to lament. Matter of fact, if someone's too happy, then people wonder, why are these people so happy? What's wrong with them? So here it says that if we use our intelligence, then we can actually conquer over the material energy known as illusion, or which is caused by lust. Lust has two aspects. One is it covers us so we don't see things clearly. And the other is impels us to do things which we know we shouldn't be doing, but we seem to be forced to do them anyhow. I think they used to have this potato chips, which I personally didn't eat, but they used to dare you, saying that, I bet you can't eat but one. Is that right? Something like that? The fact is that they put into the potato chips some chemical that forces you to eat more than one. Because the more you eat of that potato chip, the hungrier you become. Of course, salt is enough, generally. If you add a little salt to something, it increases your appetite. So you eat one, then you want to eat more. But they also add a chemical, so you eat more and more and more until you can't eat anymore. And still you eat anymore anyhow. And this is very nice because you're increasing the gross national product. And if you die, that's even better because all the medical bills, you'll really help out. So the point is that we ourselves are spiritual, and if we use our intelligence and we regulate our senses, then the result will be that instead of simply hankering and hankering, lamenting and lamenting, we can redirect our energy towards a different state of experience. That state of experience is, by the process of hearing, understanding things more clearly, so we can work in such a way as to liberate ourselves from this misconception of identifying with the body and come to realize directly our spiritual identity. And that spiritual identity, according to Bhagavad Gita, is that we all have a very intimate, loving, blissful relationship, not based upon control, not based upon some kind of ulterior motive, simply a loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose name is Krishna or Jehovah, etc. And that when we're aware of Krishna, when we have are engaged in our loving relationship to Krishna, then we're so happy and satisfied that we want nothing else but simply to increase that relationship, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, to please Krishna more and more. Not because by doing so we'll get something from Krishna, but because that relationship with Krishna is so nice that it's so satisfying that we don't want anything else except for that relationship. Now we have a relationship with the material body, and through the material body we have a relationship with so many other persons within this world, as mentioned here, the family, the society, etc. But none of these relationships can satisfy us until we understand these relationships in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because according to Bhagavad Gita, there is nothing but a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, either in illusion or in awareness. When we forget God, when we forget our relation with God, then we imagine we have a separate relationship with the body, and through the body with a family, with a society, with a nation. But when we become aware of Krishna, then we realize we only have a relationship with Krishna. That this body belongs to Krishna, our family is part of Krishna, our society is part of Krishna's energies, everything is part of Krishna's energies. And if our understanding is correct, if our motivation is correct, if our activities are correct, our every relationship, our every activity will simply further our relationship with Krishna. And that will be experienced as a growing awareness of who we actually are, a growing awareness of who the Supreme Person is, and a growing awareness of who everyone actually is. I was at the airport today distributing some books. And we can see that, generally speaking, we look around and we label everyone. Oh, this is a bad person. This is a good person. This person will take a book. This person's like this. This person's like that. And we think we know everything. We have it all figured out. And if someone doesn't fit into our category, that's because there's something wrong with them. Or there's nothing wrong with my understanding. We may change our understanding sometimes, but generally not. Generally, everyone reciprocates with us exactly as we thought they were going to. But the amazing thing is that everyone is Krishna's servant. Everyone is actually looking for the same thing. Everyone's looking to become happy. Everyone's looking for knowledge of how to become happy. And in modern society, everyone is thinking, I'll be happy if I exploit everyone else. And I'll make a few friends to do it. My friends are those who help me exploit others. And then after we exploit others, then we get the goods and we fight with each other how to divide it up. Just like a group of thieves, they robbed a bank and all the thieves went to the hideout and the head thief stood up and said, my dear fellow thieves, thank you. You did a great job. All glories to the thieves. But my dear thieves, now that we've stolen all this money, I have one request to all of you. Please, let us divide the money up honestly. So people, they're more or less, the modern society is based upon the fact that they think there is no God. Although they put on the dollar bill, God we trust. But I'm sure people have more trust in the dollar bill than in God. Or if they have any trust in God, it's because God gave them that dollar bill. The point is that it is not that by some law we're going to separate God from his energy. That somehow or another we've become a democracy and we voted God out of the country. We took him out of the textbooks. We took him out of the government. We took him out of everyone's life. Therefore, he disappeared out of frustration. He figured, I'm useless. What can I do here? And he left. I got voted out of office maybe next year. No, the fact is that God is still present. The sun is still rising at its appointed time, still setting its appointed time. God is still in everyone's heart. He hasn't left. Nothing has really changed. The only thing that's changed is our obstinacy of recognizing, our unwillingness to recognize properly how God is present and how we should act in such a way in relationship with him, relationship with all his energies, in such a way as to realize our relationship with him. So as long as we keep on thinking everything separate from God, I'm free to hear, to do here whatever they tell me to do, namely advertisements tell me to do. I'm here simply to make money and enjoy my senses, and there's nothing else to life. As long as we think like that, then we'll remain trapped in this bodily concept of life. We won't make any progress towards liberation, and we'll simply endlessly chew the same thing over and over again. So this is an opportunity, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, the chanting of the holy names of God, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. This is an opportunity to get beyond simply eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Something beyond that, to realize who we really are, what our real purpose in life, do something valuable for ourselves, and then we can actually do something valuable to help others. So thank you for your attention. Are there any questions? Yes. Yes, Krishna has everything. He has, but Krishna is merciful because he's given us this material world to realize him. So although sometimes it appears that the material world is not a very nice place to live in, and it's not. But just like the government, they create a prison with the idea of rectifying the prisoners. Now, the prisoners may not like the prison very much, or the fact that they're in prison, but either they're in prison or they're in the society. If they're in the society, they cause unnecessary problems to themselves and others. Therefore, out of mercy to the criminals, the government creates a prison house, sends the criminals into the prison house, and tries to rectify the prisoners in such a way is that they can become free again, normal, happy citizens. So God is very merciful. He's giving us whatever we desire. And since in this material world, most people desire to be separate from him. Therefore, he's created a world where, while being separate from him, we can simultaneously understand and realize our relationship with him. So God is all merciful, but it may not be very easy to understand what that mercy is. Just like a child probably gives the example that when he was younger, he saw that one of his neighbors was beating her child. So he asked the neighbor, "Why are you beating the child?" So she said that this little boy, he went to see his brother who has typhoid, and his brother said, "Mother doesn't like me today. She won't give me anything to eat. Can you please steal some rotis, some bread from it?" So the little boy went and stole the bread and gave it to his brother, who was practically almost dead from the disease, not realizing that if his brother ate this food, he'd die. So when his mother found out, she hit the little boy in order to teach him not to do things like that. That wasn't the proper thing. You almost killed your brother. So, of course, it was a slap, but it was meant for rectification, for teaching. So the material world is a place where if we do the right thing, we get encouraged. And if we do the wrong thing, we get chastised. All with the idea is trying to help put us onto the right path so we can actually become happy again. So God's mercy is present here, but it may take some understanding, some realization, understand how compassionate and how merciful God actually is. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol. Thank you.